To Be a Woman, The Life of Jill Craigie by Carl Rollison. Read by Helen Lloyd. On Her Own, 1911 to 1928. Men and women never struggle so hard as when they struggle alone, without witness, counsellor, or confidant, unencouraged, unadvised, and unpitied. Charlotte Bronte, Shirley. Jill Craigie's childhood, and indeed much of her early life, must remain a mystery to the biographer, because it is undocumented, and Jill herself preserved no trace of her first 25 years. This does not mean, of course, that this period meant nothing to her. Her extreme reticence suggests memories too painful to confide even to her family or closest friends. A biographer can only infer from a handful of anecdotes and public records the circumstances and events that surely helped to shape her character. Jill's third husband, Michael Foot, heard very little about her childhood.
"Jill never wanted to talk about her upbringing at all," he declared.
She was even vague about her birthplace. Several obituaries said Derbyshire, but her birth certificate lists London. She always gave a birth date of the 7th of March 1914, and her obituaries dutifully repeated this fiction. The correct year is 1911. Shaving 3 years off her age signalled the struggle of a woman to reinvent herself, as she did when she called herself Jill and jettisoned Noreen Joan, the legal name she affixed only to important documents. A guarded interview subject, Jill would curtail discussion of her childhood and adolescence with the comment, "My early life is a rather dismal, sordid affair." Jill's Scottish father, Arthur Charles Craigie, listed on her birth certificate as a theatre box office clerk, did not die in World War I, as her obituaries reported. There is no record of his war service. In 1933, when Jill married Claude Begbie Clench, her first husband, an assistant producer for director Alfred Hitchcock, her marriage certificate identified Arthur Charles Craigie as a merchant. In 1938, when she married her second husband, screenwriter and playwright Geoffrey Dell, her father is described as a man of independent means. He had married Jill's mother, Sonia Elkind, in the Fulham Registry Office on the 10th of May 1910. He was 25. Sonia put her age as 19, although she was actually 15. The daughter of a schoolmaster, Leo Elkind, Sonia had come from Russia, when and under what circumstances is not known, for Jill did not leave a single record regarding her mother in her papers. Jill seems to have invented the story about her father dying in World War I during an interview with journalist David Lee for a biography of Michael Foot. She apparently wanted to deflect questions about him. If Jill had any memory of her father, she kept it to herself. If she had any contact with him after her parents divorced in 1920, Jill told no one in her remaining family. If she felt the lack of a father, she never admitted it to anyone interviewed for this biography.
"Not much there. She didn't talk much about her Scotch ancestry," Michael insisted.
Jill's Russian ancestry through her mother, Sonia, meant little more. When it snowed, really snowed in the country, Jill would say, "My Russian soul is beating there." She often referred to her Russian soul, her daughter Julie Hamilton recalled. Jill's birth certificate records her parents' residence as 17 Dancer Road, Fulham, then one of the rapidly developing middle-class outer areas of the city, full of streets with two- and three-storey houses, usually occupied by two families. But Jill never acknowledged this home, if it was a home, or any other family abode. "I had no home, ever," she asserted. Jill had a brother, Arthur Ivan Craigie, born on the 17th of September 1914, about whom almost nothing is known.
Sonia gave him away to a policeman in Bexhill, in East Sussex, not far from Hastings, Jill told Julie. Later, somehow, Ivan ended up in Kenya or Tanganyika, imprisoned for a crime that apparently included fraud. "So I understand," Julie said, who met Ivan only once, when he visited Britain with his wife and two children. Arthur Charles Craigie filed a divorce petition on the 26th of March 1920, naming as co-respondent J. Marchant, the pseudonym of Eric McManus, whom Sonia married after her divorce from Arthur on the 22nd of August 1923. In all likelihood, Jill lived with Sonia and her lover by the end of the war in those sordid circumstances she refused to describe. But McManus, a cotton planter, spent much of his time in the Sudan, while Sonia travelled all over the continent, engaging in love affairs, according to Jill, who herself remained in boarding schools even during the holidays. "I can only remember spending two or three holidays with my mother, and she was apt to send me away in the middle of the holidays back to school to be alone." Jill's mother was terrible, Michael maintained. A dreadful woman. Jill never knew when she was finishing the term whether she was going to be taken off or not, or if she had to stay there. She had a real hatred of her mother. How Jill got her ideas and her temperament and her fighting spirit and her moral outlook out of such an upbringing is extraordinary. It was all done on her own. It was reading books, you know, at a much earlier age than most people. No, no, I never heard Jill say one single good word for her mother. Jill's mother was awful, Julie affirmed. Her mother would write to her at boarding school and say, "This Christmas we're going to spend it together in St. Moritz." At the end of the term, Jill would get a letter saying, "Sorry, darling, can't make it. See you in the summer." So she would go to the lavatory and sit down for a cry. Sometimes she would spend the holidays alone at school. Sometimes she was farmed out to other children's families. One day, when the same kind of "sorry, darling" letter arrived, Jill went to the lavatory and discovered she could not cry. "I realised it was a hurt too many," she said to herself. "I don't love my mother anymore."